Hello and welcome to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. My name is Natalie Himmelrich.
How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is completely self-funded, produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. Consider making a small donation to support the podcast. Go to bit.ly/support, capital G, capital T, and podcast. I repeat, bit.ly/supportgtpodcast. Thank you so much. And for more information, please visit Natalie's website, join the podcast Instagram page, and subscribe to the newsletter to receive updates on future episodes. When I spoke with Gina, I was surprised at how moved I was by the depth of our conversation, even though we just met for the first time. Gina has not only experienced multiple losses herself, but she's also working as a therapist with clients dealing with loss. Just last week, she's published her first book, a practical guide giving tools and resources helping people while they're grieving. About this week's guest, Gina Moffa is a licensed psychotherapist, mental health educator, and media consultant in New York City. In practice for nearly two decades, she has helped thousands of people seeking treatment for trauma, grief, as well as challenging life experiences and transitions. She received her master's degree in social work with a specialty in trauma from New York University. August 22, 2023, her book, Moving On Doesn't Mean Letting Go, A Modern Guide to Navigating Loss, will be on the bookshelves around the world. Please check out Gina's links in the show notes and enjoy today's episode. Welcome, Gina. It's so nice to have you on the How to Deal with Grief and Trauma podcast. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing really well. I'm excited to talk about every angle of loss. And I think, you know, I'm a little bit sleepy this morning, but what I think is so good about being in this state is that it allows us to bring in the vulnerability at times so much easier. So I'm really actually glad that we're meeting right now.
And I'm glad that you say that, because really How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is about people allowing us, the listener, to lean into what has shaped your life in terms of grief and loss, and to maybe gather some ideas on how they can deal, the listeners, with their grief and trauma. So thank you for your willingness to be here and be open and vulnerable and authentic. So why don't we start with the way I start with each of my guests, by you sharing us a little bit about how your life has shaped you in regards to grief, loss, and trauma.
Absolutely. I came into the field as a licensed clinical social worker, so I was always very interested in the human heart and all of its achings. And I started out as a trauma therapist. And, you know, it's something that we, as Western society, didn't know much about trauma. And so it was very interesting. It happened after September 11th. And I'm from New York City. And we had a very, as you may know, very large trauma there with a lot of loss. And it was the first time that people really in the West, or at least in the United States, came to understand what PTSD was. But one of the things, as I started to study more about trauma, that I realized was missing was that nobody was really talking about loss and grief. We could talk about a before and an after, but mostly in a trauma sense. And I kept thinking to myself, why are we not talking about the biggest mental health burden left by trauma? And that is grief. And so it sort of shaped my career. And at the time, you know, I don't think I understood much about how much we all carry grief and how change is loss, and how even if we don't realize that we've experienced or endured grief or loss, we have. And it's just about bringing that, you know, sort of to the forefront. About a decade into my career, I lost my mother to cancer. And I was a grief therapist who somewhat got grief wrong, thinking that I was prepared because I had all of this training and all of this expertise and all of these years behind me that I could stand on the hill with my flag and claim victory over grief. And I was knocked down pretty fiercely. And so that sort of has shaped me, and I'm happy to talk about more of that. But yeah, so I came into grief and trauma a little bit more intellectually, and then began to see how it sort of was already in my life and already in my body. And then losing my mother reminded me of how it's a full body experience and how powerful that experience can take you down.
Hmm. So you shared that, you know, about 10 years into your career, you lost your mother. But I'm just curious, what do you think was it that led you to become a trauma therapist in the first place? You know, what was the interest there? Where did it come from?
That's such a good question. I think I was always, you know, for my undergraduate work, I was an international relations major, and I was really interested in international trauma. So I was looking at human atrocities like genocide and really trying to understand, how do people in other countries have resilience? How do we go through these life-changing experiences and still find beauty in life again and still find hope? And it brought me really into more of the desire and the passion to follow that questioning, as opposed to just different parts of international relations. And so I really started out in my field wanting to understand trauma and big life events that can change people really irreversibly, but how we also can still find that love and goodness and beauty and hope in life again, despite having all of the light blown out. And so I wish I could really pinpoint the moment, but I think that traveling abroad and, you know, working in different countries within Africa really helped me to sort of want to understand deeper, really, how communities and how people come back from incredible loss and incredible trauma. And I find that a lot of other countries sometimes have done it better than the West.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke just before we started recording about our personal lives into what led us to where we came from. And I shared with Eugenia that in my life as well, I had this fascination with grief. First with grief, I would say that even in my study for applied psychology, I chose grief and loss as one of my specialties. And I remember I was intrigued to the point where I did a one-year practice, which is called One Year to Live, where you imagine that at the end of the year, you were there. And there's a couple of Buddhism, I think it's Buddhist background-led practices that you do. And looking back from the point of what I would call my most significant two losses, which is my daughter and my mother, within the span of 4 months in between. But I look back and there were losses in my life. And I shared that in the last episode of season four, a little bit more, where I can see, well, there were many losses in my life. And so you and I, we shared that there's many people do experience loss in their life and they grieve, and they might just not see the significance of that transition. And obviously, just comparing my own losses, not necessarily other people, but from my losses, I can tell the difference between the loss of my daughter and my mother versus the loss of my grandparents, as an example. And still, to some place, there was a preparation. And just, I was smiling when you said, you got grief all wrong. I mean, according to the clients that I served in their losses, I was doing a good job. But looking back, I sort of shake my head and I think, oh my God, how could I have done a good job with the knowledge, more cognitive knowledge that I had, but not the physical, as you said, full body experience that I had, which completely took me to an absolutely different place. So how was that for you? I mean, you said the interest in the field that you studied and the travels that you did for your work, then leading into trauma and then leading into grief. How does How has it been in your life prior to the loss of your mother when you look back? What kind of losses did you experience when you now look at it with through the lens of grief, loss, and trauma?
When I look back, I went through a very harrowing divorce many years before I lost my mother. And it felt like I was missing a limb. And, you know, that same, the cycles, the full body, I had lost my appetite. I mean, I was sick. And, you know, I didn't see that as grief. And I just saw that as, look, everybody goes through this. People break up all the time. And, you know, you just kind of keep going. And, you know, there's no real support groups for breakups, mm-hmm. you know? And so it made me feel as though society is just that pick up and keep it moving. But you know, there were many times of my life within my life that I could see felt like loss, even the small transitions from college, you know, college to real life, you know, watching other people have children while I was in the middle of getting a divorce and not feeling like that was going to be a possibility for me at all. And really just a lot of even micro losses, mm-hmm. you know, within all of that, we lose things like friend groups and routines and plans that we make that nobody really can conceptualize as loss and grief, but really are. And it makes us wonder why things feel so much harder. And it's because there's so many little losses within these big losses that we sometimes don't realize are there until they slowly come to the surface. And so, I mean, I think that you and I are both the same, and we can say that many people have experienced much more loss than they probably ever have even allowed themselves to think about. But if they go back in time slowly and they float back to all of these important life events or experiences that were just about change, there's loss in there and there's grief in there. Even positive changes can bring us grief. So, yeah.
It made me think back to one of the trainings that I did in grief recovery, where you do a timeline and you look at all the losses that you've experienced. And when you were talking, I thought, my God, we are so trained. Especially me and my family, I can think about that and a lot of people that I've worked with. We are so trained at discounting our losses. We're discounting, oh, well, it's not that bad. Or as you were saying, well, everyone experiences a divorce. We have to just get on with it. And I think that the discounting is one part of not allowing ourselves to say, well, no, this is hard. I remember one loss specifically, and I think I spoke about that at some point. It's a simple but symbolic loss where I lost a wallet that was given to me as a present, and I liked it and I loved it, and I took it with me to the fair, and it had like $20 inside to go on a ride or something, and I left it in the bathroom because I took it off, and then when I went back it was gone. Someone took it and took the money. And I was so devastated, but my parents would say, oh, well, I mean, they were scolding me because I didn't pay attention, but also they didn't just allow the sadness for the thing that I had lost. And I think it's so symbolic, where from a different perspective of parents, what the child has lost seems trivial, or the parents have the perspective to know, well, it's not a big deal because A, B, C, or things happen and they get new friends or whatever. But I think it's important to start, as you were saying, noticing, counting those little but significant losses.
Absolutely. And I think some of the losses, you know, I have a private practice in New York City, and I have a lot of younger people coming in more recently to talk about friendship loss. And I hear over and over that there's this sense of shame around certain losses, and friends being one of them. And, you know, when we go through significant life events, it feels like some people come with us and some don't, or some people think loss is contagious, and so they stay away, or, you know, they don't know how to deal with loss. But there are some losses that also bring shame with them. And so it's important to sort of even look at that, because people, when they feel ashamed, don't want to talk about it or don't want to acknowledge that grief, because it makes them feel unworthy or unlovable or all of these other things. And it can get really complicated, but it's one of the things that's been coming up a lot in my work. And it's been surprising that so many people have felt like they didn't want to talk about it or that it wasn't really grief related. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I always say like grief can be sneaky, you know, in the way that it shows up.
So when you said shame, they were ashamed of the loss or of what? What was the reason for the shame? Was it guilt related?
Not necessarily, but, you know, I think for people who lose friendships, it can feel like they're not, and I'm speaking broadly based on, you know, some of the people that are coming to see me, but, you know, feeling ashamed that they even lost friends to begin with, or that they have to talk about how they've lost friends, or the shame of not really understanding what happened. But there's a shame that comes with a friendship loss, because female friendships are so intimate and we rely on them as women a lot for that sense of intimacy. And I think the shame can feel like maybe I'm not also not lovable, or I don't feel worthy of this camaraderie or this, you know, deep intimacy. And it's something I'm exploring right now with the work, because it's something new that I think people, maybe perhaps since COVID, you know, where people started to kind of, obviously people went their own ways and there were a lot of changes in people's lives. But I think perhaps it, big things in our lives, big life events, losses, can make us really question who we have around us and what that feels like. And I think, but being on the receiving end of being, I guess dumped or, you know, left, abandoned, all of these words can feel really shame inducing. Yeah. And so this is something new that's happening in my practice that people didn't really identify as grief itself.
So I'd love for us to go back again to the loss of your mother. Because
sure.
You alluded a little bit to how you thought you were prepared and then you fell down. Share a little bit more maybe with the listener. How did you find yourself after that loss, in a way that you might have not expected? And how did you deal with that?
At the time I lost my mother, I actually, all in the span of 1 week, got noticed that a job where I was working as a clinical director with kids closed down very abruptly. Actually, I was at the cemetery burying my mother when I got the call that they were closing the building and to come and get my things. I traveled back home after losing her and got a notice under my door that my apartment building had been sold and I would need to find a new house. And so I have to say this, I didn't have a lot of time. I didn't have the luxury of grieving at that particular time because I needed to find a new job and a new home. And in New York City, basically, it's very hard to get, nearly impossible to get a new home without a job, simply because of the paperwork. And so I had to put grief and feelings and emotions on the back burner. And what that did for me is I got very sick physically. I wound up with a thyroid disorder. I wound up, you know, in a pre-diabetes stage. And my body basically took over. And from my neck up, I thought, okay, I'm doing this really well. I'm just getting through. I'm getting through all of the hard things and I'm keeping it moving. And I got a new job right away and finding a new place to live. And I'm doing this. But my body was breaking down slowly, slowly, slowly. And it took several months for me to realize that the grief was manifesting in my body and that I wasn't taking proper care of myself and I wasn't nourishing. I wasn't stopping to drink enough water. I wound up in the hospital with pancreatitis. I mean, it was really dramatic after she died. But I want to say it's because I really didn't feel like I was allowing in that. I wasn't allowing the grief experience to be what it was and what it needed to be. So I came out of that by really realizing that this was grief talking to me, that I was failing at being a good grief student with myself, right? And I'm saying that in jest, right? Because we don't fail at grief, but it can certainly feel that way. Mm. And it wasn't, you know, and that's not something that, you know, people, you can hear that. I'm sure you hear that all the time. I'm doing this wrong, or, you know, I feel stuck or whatever. And I felt all of those things that I tell people, no, of course you're not stuck. Of course you're doing it right. You can't fail at loss. But I think for me, and something I think a lot of people forget to do, is to come back to basics. And when in doubt, to come back to our body and make sure that it's nourished and make sure that it's rested and make sure that we're moving. And not too fast, right? So that the cortisol doesn't add up, and that we're surrounding ourselves with a really strong support system, and that we feel safe to feel what we feel around people, around the right people. But for me, it was really having to slow everything down and say, okay, Gina, you need to drink at least 8 glasses of water a day. You need to sleep. You need to take care of your body and go out for a walk. You need to be in nature if you can. New York City is hard for that, but we do have a big park. And so that's really what helped me, was really coming back to basics. And I think we can become very overwhelmed when grieving about the things we have to do and get done. And are we feeling the right things? And what happens if we were in this quote unquote stage for too long, you know? And I think we get very bogged down with a lot of that intellectualizing. And for me, I say over and over again now at this particular time in my career, which is we have to pay more attention to the body because grief lives in our body. And so that's really how I came out of it, but it was really clumsily. And, you know, I would have liked to have not gone through all of that physical pain and an illness, which I still sort of deal with from time to time. But it was a very good lesson, and it's helped me to be a better therapist in working with people, for sure.
If you were to wind back time to the place where all those multiple losses happened, what would you, Gina as the therapist, tell Gina as the person who's just lost her mom, came back from the grave, found a notice under her door, had to find another job? What would you tell her?
I would probably tell her that, you know, to pretend she was an air traffic controller and to only land one plane at a time, because trying to land all of those planes at a time would end in catastrophe, which is what I was trying to do. Okay. And that's why I say always, I had to slow it down. So I would really tell myself, let's just land one plane at a time. What is the plane we have to land first? How about we take care of our bodies? Because grief takes endurance. And if you're not feeling strong, you won't be able to do all of these other things that you want to do, even if it doesn't feel important. I would say, you know, even if it doesn't feel like you're hungry, eat. Even if you don't feel thirsty, drink water, because what you have ahead of you will take all of the physical endurance that you have for an indeterminate amount of time. So, you know, so one plane at a time, and that first plane is making sure that your body is being nourished and taken well care of. Then we can land the other planes.
And I can hear Gina at the time saying like, well, but I need to find an apartment. I need to find a job. I mean, this is important. You know, we're
totally
in New York.
100%. That would be me. Like, and you know, it can feel so overwhelming. I would say, I don't have time for that. I don't have time. I don't have time to eat. I don't have time to sleep. I have to find a job. I have to get income so I can get a letter, so I can get an apartment, you know? And I didn't add this to the story, but a restaurant that I used to go to after I went through my very big breakup, I became a regular at this restaurant. It was sort of a joke, but it was called My Headquarters. I loved this restaurant. And when I came back from New York and got the notice under my door, I went to the restaurant and they were closing very abruptly. So it was just loss upon loss upon loss. And I just didn't have any more room in my brain to process another thing. It was just total overwhelmed for me. And so I kept just saying, I don't have time for anything. I don't have time to feel. I have to just keep going and keep moving, and people need me, and there's obligations, and I have to take care of my dad. And And, you know, I think a lot of caregivers and parents can understand that it can feel like you don't have the bandwidth or you don't have the time because you have other things, you know. And, you know, United States bereavement policy is pretty poor for a lot of people. So some people have to go back to work. You know, that was part of me. I wasn't a trust fund child, so I needed to have income. Mm. And so it was really stressful. And I remember just that sense of just my brain going in circles of all of the things it needed to do. And not one of the things on that list was to slow down, to feel what I needed to feel, to allow myself the grace of grieving and missing my mother, you know, mm-hmm. which I missed her ferociously, because she obviously would know what to say in all of this. And she would have the wisdom and she would have the comfort. And I would always go to her for that. And now she wasn't here. And I was in a tailspin of trying to figure it all out on my own. And yeah, it was a really complicated, tender time, but very, very painful, obviously.
Mm. And it's interesting when you talk about that still, you know, that I can still hear the Gina that at that time would say, yeah, but I need those things. It seems like equally important to have a job and a home. As you were saying, it's difficult to have one without the other, but then also to look after yourself while grieving. And I guess from my experience, people only come to me when they're already past that money goes into a place where they can't handle anymore, be that emotionally, physically, or environmentally with the people around them, or something happens where they say, I can't do it anymore. I liked your metaphor about landing one plane at a time. I use the metaphor from the other side of the plane. I say, well, you have to put your own mask on first before you can help others around you. Because if you don't have oxygen, then...
Very true. Help.
So, and the oxygen is the self-care in whatever form it comes.
So
now
true.
You also work with clients, and you mentioned that before in your practice, and you also wrote a book. Why don't you talk a little bit about the book and what brought you to write the book?
Sure. Well, you know, I work with a lot of younger people in my private practice. So I would say, you know, from 19 on, you know, probably to 40, but a good majority of them are in their 20s. And around COVID, I had a lot more people coming to me with loss, whether it was, you know, the loss of family members, some people, multiple family members to COVID, and or livelihood, you know, people lost jobs and homes. There was a lot happening during COVID. And I was seeing people and they kept saying, you know, can you recommend a book? Can you recommend a book? And, you know, you and I both know there's a lot of books on grief, but everything I was suggesting just wasn't hitting them in the right way. And one of my clients said, well, why don't you write a book? Because when you talk to me, I actually feel like I'm being heard. And I thought to myself, and I should also add that at the time that I was getting a lot of phone calls from people in other states and, you know, more rural places within the country. And I'm licensed in New York State, so I really can't help people outside of that, at least right now before I start a coaching business. But I felt like I wanted to give as close to grief therapy as possible to people who didn't have access to it. And, you know, younger people. So I created a book that was, it's called Moving On Doesn't Mean Letting Go. And it's a little bit facetious, as in, you know, many people say, just move on. You know, you've got to move on. You've got to let go. And it's like, really? It's even if I move on, I don't let go. I bring people with me. I bring things, you know, we don't let go. So exactly. So I wrote the book and it's called Moving On Doesn't Mean Letting Go, A Modern Guide to Navigating Loss, so that I could really, I felt really strongly about creating something that was more clinically oriented, but also my own story of loss and how I got through it clumsily again, sharing a lot of stories about my clients and how they've gotten through it, but also giving tools and resources and collect, you know, and a lot of exercises to help people with things we don't think about, like how do I tell people I don't want to go to their wedding or how do I make plans for things to be out in the world if I'm triggered by a grief memory and it takes me down? How do I get past that? Or how do I get up again? You know, what do I tell people when they say I've been grieving for too long now? And so it's pretty practical, but also my hope is that it's reflective and it's funny when you write a book and you're kind of shy about it, but it's my hope is that it would feel like you're in a room with me and we're talking heart to heart intimately and authentically and with deep care and reverence for what you've been through and deep respect, finding beauty in the pain and also just acknowledging all of it, the full body experience, the trauma. And, you know, so many people don't understand that even if you haven't had a traumatic loss, that it can feel traumatizing, and really helping to normalize some of those things that you may be experiencing, but nobody is talking about for you, and how to help you get through that. So my hope is that this book is really just to help people through those initial stages, but as well as helping people when grief reawakens, as you and I both know it does, and how to prepare for those moments and be tender with ourselves and find self-compassion in those moments.
Beautiful.
That's a long description, but...
No, but very, very well. I think when you talked about it, I'm reminded that by those people who give me feedback for the podcast, who say, I don't want to go to therapy, but listening to the podcast is really good. And so us talking, we can have people sort of look through the door through an angle into our practice and say, well, if you were to come and see someone that is really attuned to you, that you feel comfortable with, this is what we would ask you. So let's just pretend. I think that's really nice for people who, for whatever reason, don't want to or can't afford or don't feel that it is right for them. But if someone were to come to you and they've just experienced a loss, a significant loss in their life, what would you do? What would you tell them? What would you ask them? How would you start?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit different in that I would also ask about their life as a whole and what was feeling okay and what was feeling strong and where they had a good support system and how they were taking care of their bodies. I think it's so common that we go to therapy and think we just focus on that one thing. But it's, for me as a therapist, and now I'm a therapist 20 years, it's important for me to see the whole picture. And that helps me to help you navigate through the things, through the dark tunnels and the sticky tar pit, and also how to navigate relationships, which is really hard after loss, and rebuilding. So, you know, although I want to know about your loss 100% for sure, I want to know about you as a person. Because when we walk in the world after loss, people just associate us with our losses, right? They'll say, like, Natalie, oh, if your loss is, oh, you poor thing. Now we only see that when we look at you. For me, you know, the same thing, like, oh, yeah, Gina lost her mom, you know, and, you know, all of this other stuff. And that's all we see when we ask how she's doing. And the truth is that we're multifaceted people. And sometimes our loss will bring up other really hard things and be a thread back to something in childhood, or, you know, my mom's loss brought up my breakup, you know, so there's so many things that we can follow the breadcrumb trail to. And so I think it's important for me to say, like, tell me about your life. Tell me when you felt this way before. Tell me about any other losses you've had, you know, tell me, you know, how have you gotten through those? So that we can work on kind of looking at your strengths and looking at how much resilience you have inside of you. And I think that's important to tell people, because people think of a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people think of therapy as just this doom and gloom for 45 minutes to an hour. And it's not how it is. We laugh a lot in my therapy sessions. It's being able to find those moments of light and the moments within us that can laugh again and find the goodness again, because it's there. And even if it doesn't feel like it in the moment, you know, being guided with that to that place is really powerful. And I understand therapy is not for everyone for a multitude of reasons, but I think maybe books, you know, and I'm not going to say just mine, but there's many, many great grief books out there that can help us at least just get from almost like we're crossing a creek, which is jumping from one rock to the next. You know, each book perhaps can offer something else for you. And as long as you're in a safe place and you're surrounded by good support in any way where you can actually talk when you need it or laugh when you need it, then that's all good. You know, connection to me is the balm that we work into these wounds of grief. And that connection can happen with anybody safe. So that was a long answer to your beautiful question.
I think it's really good because you mentioned it multiple times now, but the word resilience, because when I look back to my story, at the time, I didn't think or feel that I had any resilience. But looking back, I can see that I had it, this ember that I envisaged, this light that was burning all along, that had me look for the places around the loss, that had me connect to things that were outside. And when you were talking about that, it's exactly that. It's not just the loss. It's also, well, what else is there? What is the bright light? Where does the hope come from? And the analogy for me is like that metaphor with the grief ball, that at the beginning, when a significant loss happens, it sort of takes up all the space in your life. And whenever it hits the boundaries of your life, it hurts. And for me, I see there is that it's as if people come to a crossroad and they can choose which way to go. They can focus on the grief ball and just that, or they can say, well, what is around it? And not just stagnant, what is around in this present moment, but actually building so that life can increase around it. The loss in itself, the importance or the significance of that loss, it doesn't change, but we can build more life around it. And I see you're nodding and you're smiling. How would you describe it in terms of resilience? Well, how do you see people come through or with a loss to a place where they can tap into their resilience? What do you see with your clients or with yourself even after the loss of your mother? What resources and insight have helped you?
Yeah, you know, I think letting go of the guilt that we are going on is one of them. And that it's okay to live. It's okay to find joy, and it's okay to keep surviving and to find thriving, and to almost drop the knife to our throats that we can have to keep us in this place where we think if they're not here, we can't go on, or how could we since they didn't? And I think that's a big part of it, is to allow that, is the allowance to live. And within that life, you can't help but be bombarded by beauty. You really can't. If you make the decision to keep on going in spite of the pain and in spite of that deep void inside of you, it inevitably does slowly get filled by the wonder and these little moments, even if they're very tiny and fleeting, that life is there, and that life does unfortunately go on, and we unfortunately sometimes go on with it. But within that is sort of, and I hate to keep saying it, the beauty of life is that we don't need to find meaning in our loss. We just have to keep finding beauty in the moments. And for me, it was bringing my mother along with me and sort of seeing her now as my sidekick. And I talk to her all the time. You know, I see her, I'm on the West Coast right now and I'm hiking a lot, and I'm seeing her and the butterflies that fly past me and the birds that start singing, and finding the symbolism that's right for you that can keep you connected in some way. Like, just because somebody dies doesn't mean the relationship does. And it doesn't mean that we do, even if it feels like it. And so I think that's just really the starting place, is the decision to keep going. Just one foot in front of the other some days, really.
Wow, I love everything you just said. I have nothing to add. Just a beautiful place. Thank you so much. That was really moving.
Thank you for holding the space for that. For your listeners, Your face was so beautiful and tender and inviting, and for me to keep going. So I thank you for that so much, for holding that space.
And you know, I want to say something here, because the listener don't know, but this is actually the first time I met Gina. And I have that a lot of the time, that I meet someone and it feels right, and they're my guest, and what comes out, I mean, it's just beautiful. And to be so moved, I hope the listener allows themselves to be as moved as I am. It's just beautiful. Thank you, Gina. Whew.
Yeah. I love being in this with you. This is really what it's about, right? The connections and the work that you're doing here is saving people.
In the time span of the podcast, I usually end with the rapid fire question, just 5 questions that I ask all my guests. Would it be okay to go there now?
Sure.
So grieving and trauma means?
Rebuilding.
And healing means?
Choosing to go on.
And what have you learned about yourself in a light of loss and trauma?
To be very patient. To allow the stumbles and to still feel hope. And just allowing in the self-compassion as much as possible.
And what would you say is one thing that you wish people knew about loss and trauma?
That it's with us always, but it's not the main character of the show, and that it can be with us and change us, and not always be for the worst. And to allow in the possibility for powerful, positive transformations too.
And the last one is, one specific thing that has changed since your loss and trauma that you wouldn't want to miss?
The deep ability to feel so much stronger and so much more connected and so much more compassionate towards others in connection than I ever thought possible. And the humility of life, right? This life is, I don't take a single thing for granted anymore. Not a single thing that is beautiful do I want to pass me by. So it's really not taking a moment of joy or laughter or a beautiful flower for granted anymore.
Thank you so much, Gina. This has been such a pleasure talking to you. Yeah, I'm still moved and I like it. Thank you so much.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for what you do here. I'm deeply grateful for your work and our new connection.
Me too. And for you, listener, all the links that you want to know about Gina and the book that she was talking about are in the show notes. So go and find out about her beautiful book and peek in a little bit more into the door of her practice.
I would love that. I would be honored.
Thanks for listening to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. If you'd like to be updated on future episodes, please subscribe to my newsletter on nataliehimmelrich.com. If you need grief support, please contact me for a 30-minute free discovery session. How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. To support this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember to keep reading. I promise it will get easier.